This video shows excerpts from a work in progress of the production, Conundrum. Conundrum was supposed to have its premiere in April at the Young Vic in London, but due to COVID-19 had to be postponed.
You see, what we have to realise is that we are all in this together. Oh, no, you don't think this has anything to do with you, with your Roxy. You are every bit a part of this conundrum.
I've been working as a movement director and choreographer for Paul Anthony Morris, the writer and director in his company, Crying in the Wilderness Productions, which is an associate company at the Young Vic in London.
I concluded, therefore, that if it's justifiable to sacrifice the lives of young men and women overseas for an ideal like democracy, then surely we could make the same magnanimous gesture here for a more equal and just society.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Shane.
Thanks for joining me in this conversation today. I'm going to get on with talking about process and practice, and I know you've coined a term called theatre of the soul. And I just would like to ask what theatre of the soul is to you and how you arrived at it.
Yeah. So I arrived at theatre of the soul, the concept, the idea. It's not necessarily a new idea in terms of it being multidisciplinary, which is in the theatrical form, combining all the different elements of performance, music, dance, mime, photography, film. I arrived at that through the cultural practice, that within the African Caribbean community, we don't really see the distinctions, or we don't isolate the art forms. They're normally combined. So it's really strange coming from that artistic context where everything is interdisciplinary to be working in a very kind of isolated theatre, music, dance space. So the concept and the idea of developing a multidisciplinary practice actually is a cultural heritage that I've inherited as an African Caribbean artist. Theatre of the Soul in particular arose because I wanted to use these other elements, especially dance, to give the audience and to give my characters a much more deeper psychological journey. And that journey is, in essence, for my characters to be literally stripped naked, metaphorically. So in as much as we, at theatre, in as much as we have costumes and sets and all that kind of stuff, those are like garments to me, which people use to help present the performance that they're going to execute. For me, using music and dance, etc., it helps to denude the character. So the soul, the entity, the closer we can get to the soul of the person, the greater the artistic and theatrical truth for the audience. So the whole idea is to use these other disciplines to strip away aspects of the personality, so that the audience actually engage with the soul of the character. And that's why you will always see within our performance structure, it will go from great psychological angst to huge emotional bliss and ecstasy and everything within. So we get to see the psychological journey of the character from great angst to great ecstasy and everything in between. Because the disciplines like movement or dance helps us to strip away the egotistical aspects of our personality. So that's why the interdisciplinary structure, although it was an cultural inherited one, the reality is the choice for using it was to strip away, not to add.
Great. Curious, because I wasn't aware that the Afro-Caribbean aesthetic or approach to theatre and storytelling, in some sense, embodied that interdisciplinary approach, because it's exactly the same in Bharatanatyam. We don't have these sort of independent genres of work. There's a kind of interconnectedness and understanding of how those practices correlate. Could you explain how that existed within the Afro-Caribbean community? I mean, in the ways it was staged and the ways they manifested. And I mean, I kind of understand them in terms of artistic practices coming together, but in terms of how it's inherited, could you
give me... So storytelling, or the griots, or even the priests of our mythological traditions, they told stories. But those stories were not the classic Eurocentric version whereby you just spoke your story. Music and dance was always an integral part of the storytelling process, always. Ritual, as within the Asian culture, is very central to our mythology. So it's a tradition that has been present from the birth of time, so to speak. It's not something that you can say it evolved at this particular time. It's always been present in our culture. I'll give you an example. If you look at the most popular musical genres, you look at hip hop, if you look at reggae music, but any of the classical musical forms that have emerged over the past century always have a kind of mythological aspect towards it. So even though it might be, for example, I don't know, it could be a rap artist, what you have going on in that rap video is the mythology of the rap artist. You also have the music, but you then also have storytelling. And that storytelling is manifested in dance, which goes hand in hand with music, but also in terms of acting performance. Mm-hmm. So there is this concept of iconography within the whole structure of the black music that is always about telling stories, and it's always about bringing all the other disciplines to tell that story so that they can psychologically impact on the audience at a much deeper level.
Great, thank you for that. I wasn't even aware that kind of journey in history existed, and it's obviously kind of splintered off into different modalities of functioning within different artists. And I know that in your practice you work with dance, but you've also worked with your actors on your own as a director, and you have a methodology which you call phenomenology. Give us a little insight into how phenomenology works and what that process. Yeah.
I think the easiest description to give you, just so that people can visualize the form, is to compare it to Tai Chi. It's not Tai Chi, but to compare it to Tai Chi in terms of it's a movement meditation. And it's a movement meditation that enables me, predominantly with the central characters, because as I spoke about earlier on, we have this huge range of personality on stage with the actor that goes from great angst to great bliss. So what phenomenology does through movement meditation is it's an exploration within the character or the actor, an exploration within that innate that opens them up much more, so that they can experience the different psychological footprints that already exist in them, all right? But through phenomenology, because it's a slow movement technique, they are able to identify it much clearer for themselves. So for example, if I want a character to express, for example, rage or love or joy or peace, what I would do with that particular actor is, when we're doing phenomenology, I tell them to do it with that mood. So they will do for themselves the meditation, the movement meditation, with that particular mood. And then I will ask them to locate that within their body. And so after a period of time, having located different emotions within their particular body, as they develop, they can call upon those emotions anytime they wish by locating mentally, all right, where the aspect of the body that that particular emotion has been stored by them, and trigger it. So it enable, again, it's about taking the actor into a deeper psychological state, but using their own body as memory to trigger those states as and when they need to. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of using it is that, you know, actors invariably play really challenging roles. And one thing that I think that our industry does, it negates the responsibility, the duty of care that it has for actors who have to play really challenging roles. So, for example, if I'm playing a drug addict, if I'm playing a violent person, if I'm playing a depressed person, what tends to happen is that an actor has a 4-week run, and they're living with that character on stage for 4 weeks. They've previously lived with that character maybe for 4 or 5 weeks in rehearsal, and then maybe for another month in terms of their own personal research prior to that rehearsal period. So they've absolutely embodied this particular character, which is not them. What happens at the end of a performance or the end of the show? The actor is left with these emotions, all right? And the theater industry hasn't put anything or set up any kind of parameter that will enable the actor to actually take that garment off and become the person that they are naturally are. And what phenomenology does, if it's a really extreme role for the character, they can use it to return back to themselves. They can use the meditation technique to return back to themselves after every show, or they can wait until the performances have been completed and engage in phenomenology, all right, to reactivate their own personality, to separate themselves from the character, negative characteristics of the character that they were playing. So it's used for those two purposes.
That's brilliant. Okay, and yeah, you're absolutely right. I think if you are playing a challenging role, then you are left with those emotions. And do you think, I mean, just questioning that, do you think that responsibility should lie with the performer, or do you feel that that is the responsibility of the organization or the body that's supporting that work?
Yeah, I think it's the responsibility of the company, first and foremost. I mean, if you look at sports, all right, they have, after their activity, they have what you call a warm down session, all right? Every sport has it, a warm down session, whereby they bring, when the crowds have gone, they bring the sports stars, the athletes, back onto the track or back into the football stadium, and they go through like a 30-minute cool down session, which is simply to bring the actors, to bring the performers down from that extreme heightened state that they've experienced or endured, all right? To bring them down from that psychologically, safely in their own bodies, safely within, you know, an acceptable mental state, so that they can go out and reconnect with their loved ones, with their colleagues, or with life again. So it's the response. So it's only in the theatre industry, because I believe in dance it's the same thing. When you do a performance, you have a cool down session where you stretch, you come together, and you calm down. In the theatre industry, that does not exist at all. So it is the response, and I think it's a duty of care. It's the responsibility of the company, who knows the kind of work that they're going to do and is very much aware of the kind of psychological trauma that the actor will go through playing this particular part. I mean, imagine playing a rapist for 6 weeks. And you've been carrying that burden with you for 12 weeks, all right? In terms of your own research, in terms of rehearsal, in terms of performance. You've been carrying that negative energy around with you for 12 weeks. It's not something that you can just suddenly You can't suddenly disrobe yourself of that particular character. What if you've got young children? You're going back home to that setting, with that energy, that vibration. And this is why you find in the acting industry that the divorce rate is so high. And relationships tend not to survive, because I don't think as a theatre company, I think it's my responsibility to take care of the emotional stability of my artists as people.
Yeah.
And that's also my responsibility, not just what happens in the rehearsal room and on the stage. So it's the, for me, it's about the total well-being of the actor.
And I'm just going to, phenomenology, because you were talking about emotions and allowing the emotions to start to almost inform the body how to react to those. Mm. How do you, so that seems very clear, but there's obviously layering, and when the layering happens in, so if you're feeling fear with that is led by anger, it's sort of two layers of emotions working. And if do you play with that, and then what do you notice happening to the body to capture those spaces in between emotions that are fluctuating?
Okay, if we say sadness and anger are the two emotions, so which one is the more dominant? So in a piece of text, I may turn around and say, okay, at the beginning of this scene, all right, the dominant emotion is anger, but I want at the end of the scene, the concluding emotion, I want it to be sadness, all right? So there's a sliding, as you said, there is a sliding scale. And so what I will do with the actor is, first of all, we need to identify them independently. So let's, for example, I said that if I said to you, Shane, where do you most feel anger in physically in your body? And if you say in my chest, that's where I identify it. And then I say to you, well, where do you feel fear? Where do you really feel fear? And if you say, I feel it in the pit of my stomach, all right? So from your chest to the pit of your stomach, we do have a halfway, there is a halfway line, all right? So it's a sliding scale. Because all emotion is a sliding scale from love to hate. It's on the same trajectory, all right? But opposite ends, all right? So it's a sliding scale. If I want you to exude absolute love, all right? Then you do that to your maximum capacity.
Yeah.
And if I want you to draw back, then I just tell you to start to draw back. So if we understand that the dividing line between anger and sadness is in the middle of your body, that is where you bring those two emotions. All right. But you have to understand which is the dominant one first and what you want to be the concluding. All right. Now, once you understand which is the dominant and what you want to be concluding, all you do, I say, okay, Shane, anger's here, and this is sadness. You've got to find the in-between. And that is what we will investigate in phenomenology. We will investigate the in-between. And I'm saying this because 9 times out of 10, I mean, you know this, when we talk about anger, we're always talking about it in terms of words. I'm not talking about an expression of anger or sadness in terms of words. I don't want you to tell me you're sad, and I don't want you to tell me your anger. That is cheating the audience. What I want is an expression. So that's the reason why I'm saying that the actor experiences within their own torso those emotions, and they are able to identify what triggers them, what maintains them as well, which is normally shortness of breath, if it's a negative energy. They understand within their own body the trigger points. Mm. And the sliding scale is what they themselves will figure out in the phenomenology. And once physically he or she feels it in their body and they anchor it there, they know exactly where it is.
Yeah.
It's all about repetition. Everything is about repetition.
It's muscle memory. It's coming from a muscle memory is being around emotional states and an emotional understanding. And I think what you said in that was incredibly important, that I resonate with as well. And in terms of
practices that I've encompassed is this, the feeling, the expression. So yes, there is movement and you can do it, but if in order for an audience to feel that, the performer has to feel it. And sort of learned movement, it's felt movement, and that is the fluid space between audience and spectator, and the audience performer.
What I say to my actors is, if you feel it, the audience will see it. If you feel it, whatever emotion that you genuinely feel, we will see it. We will feel it. We will be touched by it. So there's no real need to act to an audience. You just be truthful, and in your truthfulness, the audience will clearly see it as light as day. And then more than anything else, and this is why dance is important within Theatre of the Soul, they will feel it.
Thank you so much. Well, we're out of time. I think we've come up to 20 minutes. So thank you so much for sharing all of those experiences and insights into your process.
Well, thanks for having me on. And I'll see you in the rehearsal room soon.
Okay.